Hi, good evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Dakota Lone Star, and tonight's program is entitled Democrats, Antonin's, oh my goodness, Scalia, Independent Filmmaking, and the Constitution. All right, I've got a lot to cover tonight. This particular program, our program may end up running 2 hours, looking for your phone calls tonight. Go ahead and get your cell phones out and dial the numbers 929-477-4090 and go ahead and save that particular phone number and have it on speed dial for future reference, because we are getting ready to take the current establishment to task. All right, I am Dakota Lone Star. You can obviously interact on our website or at our website at www.40and28forever.com. You can like me on Facebook as Dakota Lone Star and follow. I'll be updating that particular page soon enough. And then on Twitter at @DOC_OTA. Lone Star. That's @Doc_OTA Lone Star. All right, so Democrats, Antonin's, Scalia, that just sounds like a Supreme, obviously, he was a Supreme Court justice and is, in my opinion, still part of that, part of the Hall of Fame where the Supreme Court is concerned. And we're looking at the Constitution tonight, too, because, well, it's quite fitting, that's why. All right, look, here's what we're going to do. Listen, rather. I'm going to cover a couple of pieces in the Washington Post, dated Monday, February 15th, 2016, the day after Valentine's Day. And I've got a couple of things to cover. And first we're going to look at Ruth Marcus's article. Name a New Justice Now is the title of her article. And so we're going to look at that article somewhat in depth this evening, and then we're going to look at a second article by E.J. Dion Jr. called A Court Fight for the Ages, also on page A17 of the Washington Post, their Monday edition, February the 15th, is what we're looking at. All right, so Ruth Marcus, a columnist with the Washington Post, believes that we should name a new justice now, and has penned an article by the same name, Name a New Justice Now. Wow, okay. Could anyone possibly be more demanding than a liberal progressive Democrat? I think not. In her article, Ms. Marcus asserts that it would be, among other things, bad for the country, quote-unquote, if a Supreme Court justice wasn't named prior to the next president promising to protect us from enemies of the domestic sort. Oh, excuse me, of enemies both foreign and domestic. The vacancy would still quite easily prove overshadowed by her inner onions or the darling of the left, number 44, and his having leaned on at least, or his administration, because we can never get to the inner onion. There are so many layers there. Of course, he couldn't be behind the poor decision-making at Benghazi. Of course, he couldn't be behind having led such a, or imposed such a brilliant speech at the United Nations 2 weeks after Benghazi 2012. But listen, the vacancy would still quite easily prove overshadowed by her inner onions having leaned on at least four independent filmmakers since 2012 alone, one of which was an Egyptian-born Coptic Christian by the name of Nakula Basali Nakula, and another was of Indian descent, an American Indian of the Middle East, or Far East, somewhat Far East at any rate, by the name of Dinesh D'Souza. But that couldn't possibly be bigotry personified now, could it? Okay, so you lean on four filmmakers, four independent filmmakers since 2000, and since 2012, or actually perhaps even just ahead of that in terms of Andrew Breitbart. But at least four filmmakers have been leaned on now. And the producer and or directors of 13 Hours allegedly have joined that group, that honorable group of people. And although the key difference being independent filmmaking versus 13 Hours, obviously. But look, furthermore, Ruth Marcus asserts that one party's obstructionism ends up hurting it down the road, quote unquote, which I beg to differ. Obstruction of justice hasn't harmed Democrats that have met well after the midnight hour to single-handedly force Obamacare down our throats. Now, you know what the Bible says about children of the night, right? Well, perhaps not, but go ahead and look it up for yourselves. Begin to Google search Children of the Night within the Holy Bible. We've devolved well beyond that now. We're at a point in which obstructionism could even begin to make its way through the insulated wall that protects the Democrat Party. Right now, a next to godless society has made its bed. Notice I've not called for legislation that would even remotely interfere with your form of laissez-faire, otherwise correctly deemed groupthink today by conservative Americans. Now, I studied groupthink in college. And when I look around, I easily spot progressives and Democrats because they parrot the narrative so well that it's as if a pendulum was swinging ahead of them and before their very eyes, and they all parrot the exact same narrative. It's really kind of freaky. It's scary and so forth. Tonight's guest call-in number is 929-477-4090. But I wanted to talk about a few other things within Ms. Marcus's article entitled Name a New Justice Now. I want to briefly remain on topic. One party's obstructionism ends up hurting it down the road. I don't think that's true any longer. I believe that the Republican Party and independent thinking, God-fearing, Constitution-loving, pro-Second Amendment and pro-life folk are the only people that have been scarred as of late for that which is construed as obstructionism. But hypocrisy can be deafening, right? Hypocrisy can be so deafening. I mean, what about when the whiny babies in the Senate walked out during early hearings, during the early Benghazi hearings? No, that's not obstructionism. Trying to, you know, even if Hillary Clinton were weren't guilty, rather, of high crimes and treason, in my opinion, walking out of hearings, I mean, and then you're calling Republicans obstructionists for filibustering a president's would-be pick, number 44's beloved ranker, if you will. All right. So she goes on to say in her article, and I'm quoting again, listen to the Republicans in the Senate or on the campaign trail arguing for inaction. Their claims proceed from the position of raw power, not constitutional language. Well, let's talk about raw power, shall we, for a moment? Let's talk about the raw power that was wrought and played out while the last couple of years of Bush's second term. Let's talk about that for a minute. Because if I remember correctly, that is when unemployment rose to great new heights. And that's when things began to fall apart, when both the Congress and the Senate were ruled by libtards. That's when things fell apart. And you can even graph that from a financial standpoint. It's absolutely unequivocally out there for you to graph, to actually graph the movements prior to libtards taking control of the Senate and the and Congress. All right. So moving along in the article, she went on to say that as to circumventing Congress and misusing the courts, I'm sorry, wait a second. She said a divided country elected this president and this Senate. Doesn't it make sense in Grassley's terms that we defer to the votes Americans already cast? As to circumventing Congress and misguiding or misusing the courts, gee, we've seen an awful lot of conservatives turning to the courts to try to circumvent the legislative process, see Obamacare. You want to talk about Obamacare for a moment, folks? Do you really? Can you say children of the night? There are children of the day in the Bible and children of the night, and likewise children of the night. Anyone that holds a vote at 2 or 3 a.m. Probably isn't the most honest group of people. And the act of there's a body again, the Democratic Party did. And then they shoved Obamacare down our throat. And I find that to be an affront to the Constitution. Actually, I picture, you know, like these dogs at a card table, and they have these cigars in their mouth. Actually, worse than dogs, right? These, you know, they're playing cards, and they're gonna, you know, and then things come out in the open, you know, things like, oh, we're just gonna have to let you read it so that you know what's in it, you know, like Pelosi, the quite dim, one of the dimmer bulbs on America's tree, that's for sure. So, groupthink. Groupthink is prevalent and readily accessible within the Democrat Party. No doubt about that. All right. So she went on to say that history offers no refuge for Republicans here. And she also went on to say toward the end of the article, capture, she said, we should not allow a lame duck president to essentially capture the Supreme Court in the waning months of his presidency, Ted Cruz told ABC's George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. We should not allow a lame duck president to essentially capture the Supreme Court in the waning months of his presidency. She went on to say, capture? Read the Constitution, Senator. The president shall nominate, not shall, unless some unwritten, nominate by date has passed. So much for strict constructionism and conservatives who bleed about their fealty to the constitutional text. Conservatives who bleed about their fealty. Really, really, Miss Marcus. We bleat like lambs. The cover of the New York Daily cover that showed Trump in makeup and the brain dead. And, you know, well, yeah, all we have to do is go out and interview a handful of your constituents and, you know, those of us that do have an IQ higher than 85 or 90 are able to recognize that your constituents are just slap happy, stupid, for the most part. And they're being played, like I said in previous programs, like a virtuoso's instrument of choice. And that virtuoso loves to play his or her instrument of choice. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and move on now to E.J. Dionne Jr.'s article entitled A Court Fight for the Ages. And I mentioned earlier that it's on page A17 of the Monday, February 15th edition of the Washington Post. So, and I'm going to take exception with some of the things that he's had to say here. So he opens up his piece by saying, in most presidential elections, Supreme Court nominations are a major issue for elites and a substantial concern for significant parts of the conservative movement. Okay, so we're elitists, even though we truly care about the person that is struggling and wants to better his or her life and is able to see beyond the $15 minimum wage, beyond a $15 mandatory minimum wage across this great land of the mighty and the free and the brave. $15 is the end all to America's depravity. Other than taking everything from the one percenters that have produced the jobs primarily in America. All right. So, other voters usually see the future, says E.J. Dionne Jr. Other voters usually see the future makeup of the court as a side matter or not essential to their decisions at all. He said Justice Antonin Scalia's death on Saturday will change this. He said, E.J. goes on to say that you read that right. After decades during which conservatives complained about liberal judicial activism, it is now conservatives who are unabashed in undermining progressive legislation enacted by the nation's elected branches. One moment, please. Okay, I just want to make sure that my speaker is down at zero so there was no feedback, because I wanted you to hear this next point, as I've wanted you to hear every point that I've made thus far. Did you catch that? Liberal judicial activism. Or I'm sorry, he went on to say it is now conservatives who are unabashed in undermining, right? That we're undermining progressive legislation enacted by the nation's elected branches, plural, rather than the nation's elected branch, which is really what progressives are engendering, you know, that this belief in an all sacred government head, if you will, by the nation's elected branches. Oh, okay, so you mean like the Republicans had a lot of say in terms of Obamacare at 3 a.m. and I believe they were even out of session, which is quite interesting. So I don't know how that wasn't immediately struck down without even a fight, so to speak. But that's kind of what we're looking at, you know, here, just a bunch of zombies on the left. And further down in his article, he said, the court's conservatives have also regularly undercut the power of unions and the ability of citizens to wage legal battles against corporations. Corporations are so evil, after all, right? They only, without corporations, all of us would have a job, or in terms of Americans. But then he goes on to say, watch this. This is really interesting. He said, such decisions already had the potential of broadening the range of progressive constituencies invested in making the court a major election issue, including political reformers. Look at this. The court a major election issue, including political reformers, African Americans, environmentalists, and organized labor. Now, there's a narrow scope there. If you really look at what Mr. E.J. Dion Jr. has stated within that, it's a very narrow scope. It's more narrow, in fact, than the eye of a needle that a camel would have to get down on its front legs and knees and work its way through the eye of a needle, so to speak, right? That the Bible speaks to. So why does it say political reformers, African Americans, environmentalists, and organized labor? Because certainly E.J. Dion Jr. is, after all, a political rights activist and speaks for all segments of society. I take issue with that he only mentioned African Americans. What about the Asian Americans? What about Jewish Americans that are being targeted at a ratio of 2 to 1 versus other people within the nation? Or at a ratio of 2 to 1 where African Americans are concerned. What about the Jews living here? They haven't the right to, and then, you know, the environmentalists, and I'm completely environmental. I actually recycle everything but avocado pits, basically. I don't leave my water running. I mentioned this in my last program. When I brush my teeth, and I'm so thankful that for that Super Bowl ad, man, whew, so thankful that as a conservative, I thought I was doing something wrong by turning off my water. You know, every drop counts, hashtag, every drop counts. And I needed a Super Bowl ad to set the record straight on that. And then he said, and Republicans did themselves no favors in the coming argument by moving in a hard political direction even before most of the tributes to Scalia had been published, and even before the president had actually picked someone. Now, generally that's how it works, you know, a body cools, and then you tend not to stray away from, say, the Kayla Muellers if you have half a heart. If I only had a heart. If he only had a heart. In, you know, like with the Kayla Muellers, you know, the tributes generally come, should, and in a civilized society, shouldn't the pick, a president's pick for a replacement, come after, at least shortly after, at least allow for 7 to 10 days for an autopsy. I mean, excuse me, I'm not proposing that there was any foul play, but at least allow for 10 days to allow for the family to grieve, for them to bury their loved one. After all, the Constitution wasn't written, you know, wasn't the point of the compass in terms of constitutional decency and morality. But I disagree with that as well. I believe that the individual, we're responsible individuals, live out their days, even if they're creating films that aren't popular in certain circles, God forbid. You know, the left is just a bunch of whiny babies, man. It's like they should be forced to watch, taped to a chair and made to watch The Book Thief and then write a report on it. And if they didn't get anything out of it, then they should be a little snip-snip there and a tie-tie here and a tube of litigation and a vasectomy there kind of thing going on. You know, like, if you don't understand that everything, even as far back as history would have it, on our side, within the Garden of Eden, there was one tree that they were commanded not to eat of, but they still had the choice. If you eat of the tree the fruit of the tree in the midst of the garden, right? But they still had the right to. So if it's not about individuals, it just doesn't exist. And, you know, your la-la land is just, you know, an Egyptian-born Coptic Christian that may have witnessed, and I talk about this a lot in the past, I don't overdo it or kick a dead horse, I don't think. But actually, I'm certain that I don't, and I'm acutely aware of the fact that I bring up Nakula Biseli Nakula, an Egyptian-born Coptic Christian residing in the United States that created the film Innocence of Muslims, and somehow savagery is the result of a film, and you really want to forward that narrative? I mean, like, and are you doing freedom any favors whatsoever with forwarding that goofy satanic narrative in the first place? Oh my goodness, that would be like me or the Republican Party saying you can't write a book, The Dreams of My Father, or whatever, My Father's Dreams, or there's no book deal for you after 2 years and or 2 terms in office as a president, because you know your dad or someone in your family might have suffered in Africa. No, we allow for those things, right? Because we understand that the world has dealt with some injustices, and most injustice has come at the hands of bloated government and also the horror where journalism is concerned, and you know, and it's in these nations where they crack down on the Dinesh D'Souza's, and it's happening here. It's happening here, and our college students they don't realize it. They can't even name our sitting. Most of them can't even name our current vice president, for God's sake. Let alone Dinesh D'Souza or Nicola Baselli Nicola or the director Michael Bay or Andrew Breitbart, which I'm going to leave alone because that's I believe Jesus will straighten that out one day. But we leave it alone. I mean a Christian family doesn't agree with homosexuality and God forbid doesn't agree that they were made that way or whatever and doesn't sell them a cake. And then that couple sues to the tune of $130,000. And one of the charges is that they can't go to work after suffering that travesty. A travesty is being chased by someone on horseback in Darfur as a black child and a mother running for their lives as her shoulder gets hacked open. And that's... My God, we're equating like words. I remember the day, honk at, if you remember the day, go ahead and give me a call at 929-477-4090. Roll your window down and lay on your horn. If you remember the day when we used to run around and it was popular to say or sing the ditty, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I mean, we have a serious problem in the United States if our institutions for higher education, quote-unquote, can't handle films like Innocence of Muslims, which is just a crock of crap, if you ask me, because, look, basically what's happened is on college campuses we've heard the stories of professors that have asked students to draw a picture about Jesus and then stomp it out or stomp on it or whatever. And somehow that's okay. But you know what? I say really to each his own. But if you're going to do that, then you better damn well be okay with showing Innocence of Muslims the next day. If not, you're favoring one religion over another. And then the third day, you should be okay with courting atheists and the fact that they should be allowed to believe that there's nothing greater out there right now than man. And they should be able to write about it, and they should be able to speak about it. Freedom of the press should belong to the atheist. Freedom of the press should belong to Christians that believe that the gospel came by mercy and truth. Freedom of the press should belong to Egyptian Coptics. Freedom of the press should belong to Americans of Eastern Indian descent. Freedom of the press should belong to each and every one of us. All right. So listen, I'm going to open up a chat here, and I'll be right back in just a couple of minutes, and we can kind of move on from there. But I may a couple other things that I kind of want to take up. I was thinking about taking up this evening, but I'll be back at about 7:10. right, this is Dakota Lone Star, and I'm back. All right, the call number is 929-477-4090. That call number again is 929-477-4090. Go ahead and plug that into your cell phones and have it on speed dial. We're having, I think, one of the most, if not the most important discussion of this current age, if you will. You think it's a travesty. I mean, the left, the progressives, see it as an actual travesty where, you know, they're an appointee won't be sworn in, you know, as a replacement for Scalia, for Justice Scalia. They see it, they're just freaking out, like it's the end of the world, like the, you know, and then on our side, we believe it's next to the end of the world because of the individual freedom of the individual freedom of, you know, Nikula Basile Nikula, an Egyptian-born Coptic Christian that moves over here, makes a film called The Innocence of Muslims, or Dinesh D'Souza, one of the brightest minds in America, creates content that that the Inner Onion finds objectionable, and then a judge said that all of a sudden a judge ends up claiming that he's a danger to himself and possibly even society, and basically commands Dinesh D'Souza to see a psychologist and be assessed, basically, on whether or not he's a threat to himself or others. And then he passed with flying colors. And then the judge said, no, you need to see a second doctor. So he went and saw a second doctor, and he passed with flying colors. And then the judge said, no, you need to see a third doctor. So at that point, it doesn't take anyone with an IQ greater than 57 to realize at that point that you're calling in a hack activist somewhere. And you've already tied up the gentleman's time, and which his greatest resource is an independent filmmaker and documentarian in Dinesh D'Souza. So look at how much time that's been tied up. And then he has to serve community service. So if you can't jail the person, or you don't come up with enough suitable information to have that person incarcerated or placed under house arrest, like Nikula Basile Nikula, or deemed insane, then you just rule via fiat, and you tie the resources, like time and finances and or money, like the Kleins, in the case of the Kleins out in Idaho. If I were a homosexual and I went to and you all need to get over yourselves. I mean, really, if a heterosexual whoremongering, you know, someone that was into proliferation where numerous partners was concerned, walked in and he was so proud to be an adulterer, and he said, I want to marry Sue on Saturday, and I would like for y'all to make me a cake. But gosh, I just love the fact that I have all these concubines in Eastern Idaho, and the Kleins would have declined his request and his order as well. So you need to get over yourselves, really. I mean, the Kleins are genuine folk, and you should just move on. Just, you know, so much for knowing the rest of the Bible. If you believe And you must, because it's quoted out of context by your beloved Inner Onion on a biannual, at least a biannual basis. but there's another place in Scripture where it says to shake the dust from your feet and just kind of move on. And shake, and it's a kind of a judgment against the people and the people of that town or the people of that city. Walk around the corner. I haven't really Googled it. I mean, the town that they live in, was there another baker other than the Kleins? And then to cry before a judge. You know, all of us have suffered something. My brother and I weren't large gentlemen, so to speak, or strapping lads, and so we were picked on sometimes. But we lived through it, you know. Some crazy stuff was said about us, whatever. Overweight people are unduly picked on, and oftentimes end up making the best friends, and it's just part of life, you know. Sticks and stones surely break bones. As a matter of fact, I just read a Facebook post where like a World War II vet in his 90s was actually beaten to death recently by a Black Lives Matters person with a baseball bat. So should we outlaw baseball bats and softball bats? Should we outlaw stones because Cain rose up, as history would have it, and bludgeoned his brother to death with a stone, and Abel's blood cried out from the ground, as the good book has it. And so we need to outlaw stones, too. And anyway, there's just so many things going on. But the greatest tragedy, the travesty that should have the hair on the back of our neck and on our back standing up when a non-inhabitant of a particular home, so to speak. You know, my dog, I think, is only like shied away from one person in the 2 years that we've owned her, or nearly 2 years that we've owned her. And she's a pretty good judge of character. I think it was one person. And, you know, but the dog's, you know, a dog's territory, if another dog works its way into that territory, their hair will often bristle. And there's no real bristling of our hair in America over the fact that an Egyptian-born Coptic Christian was placed under house arrest for making a film, for God's sake. There should have been an uproar, that an incomparable uproar at that, over that alone. And then you've got Dinesh D'Souza. There really should have been an uproar over that. And now allegedly this particular administration leaned on the producers and director of 13 Hours. Well, anyway, that there should be an uproar over that as well. But then, get this, boy, they picked their battles well, I'll tell you that. The beloved Inner Onion, the Zombie King, in my opinion, actually had all good to say about the interview. And when Sony was trying to protect its personnel from physical harm, from possible physical harm versus perceived injustices, or injustice that doesn't harm someone bodily, and it was a sick film, and it was sub-sophomoric, the interview. To each his own. Go see it. I'm not stopping you. That's the other problem I have, and I spoke to that. I alluded to that point in great detail during my last program. Go see what you want to see. Don't go see what you don't want to see. But for God's sake, don't give $20,000 to the exclusion of atheists and Christian artists to someone that submerges a crucifix in urine, calls it art, and then the National Endowment for the Arts gives that person $20,000. Now, in my opinion, who needs law? Congress shall make no law. You know, abridging the individual beliefs of another where religion is concerned, right? And I'm not quoting it from the Constitution, but you get the point. But yet, the National Endowment for the Arts can give $20,000 to the creator of Piss Christ. And we're not, even though I'm upset about that, I'm not going to become violent. And that's what separates the men from the boys and the women from the girls. If you're able to, like, realize that the best case scenario for the world is for differing opinions to play out within newspapers, within films, within public speech, and on and on and on. That's what makes us exemplary. We are exceptional because of that alone. And it's either the individual or it's corporatism in terms of groupthink. Those are your two choices, really, that you're faced with in the United States right now. That's really your two choices. Corporatism in terms of groupthink and the individual's right to serve a holy God if they want to believe that a holy God exists, right? And groupthink is, you know, they want to pretend progressives, they live in this fantasy land that we have the energy and the time to babysit adults. But I guess it does take a village after all, right? Not just to raise their children up in the ways of the Lord, which isn't a lack of context where Holy Scripture is concerned, but also their adults evidently need it, and they're happy with their latest iPhone and their food stamps the rest of their life, and they're not aspiring beyond the $15 mark that they've set for themselves. And I think, you know, we have an hour and 10 minutes remaining in this particular program, and I need to write down that marker, if you will, because if the goal is $15 an hour, then you're kind of a sorry piece of crap anyway. Sorry excuse for a human in one sense. If the goal is $15 an hour, you're not stretching yourself. You're not a bootstrapper, so to speak. And it doesn't work well that way. We need a percentage of bootstrappers, and I understand that not everyone is going to be into bootstrapping in any nation. And they're not going to roll up their sleeves and go to work for something greater than $15 an hour. I realize that a segment of society is always going to not aim all that high. They're not going to aim for the stars. They're actually going to aim for the horizon, and then they're going to end up with $15 an hour, which is fine. To each his own. If that is actually what ends up happening in America, that there's a $15 minimum wage that comes about, then, you know, good for you. But that's not, I wouldn't be, but really what you're proposing in Bernie Sanders is something larger than that, even, and more insidious, or most insidious, rather. You're proposing that you take everything from the rich, and you're looking for, on one end of the parameter, you're looking for $15 an hour. On the other end of the parameter, you're actually looking for the Buffett rule on steroids, so to speak, right? So how is that even a viable collective solution is well beyond me, because it just, it's like the Facebook photo that's been going around for a few years, with a snake eating itself or ingesting itself, rather than other prey. And that's exactly what you're looking at. You know, if you call, you know, I'm making less than $12 an hour in terms of my day job right now, and you don't hear me crying. I'm still a staunch conservative, but at the same time, I put in another, I put in approximately 80, sometimes 100 hours a week, because I want a better life. And I believe that my best shot at a better life, and I'm not talking about 9 homes like Michael Moore has. I'm not talking about the $3 or $4 million a year that that the lady with the butch haircut, which she has every right to, I can't think of her name offhand. Give me a call at 929-477-4090 if you want to kind of chime in this evening. I'd love to hear from you. Again, that call number is 929-477-4090. So, why can't I think? Rachel Maddow, I'm sorry. So you've got, you know, the Rachel Maddows and the Michael Moores of the free world that supposedly detest capitalism, and yet they'll go out and buy their 9th or 10th home, and then, now I'm not sure if that's schizophrenia at work, or if it's interesting, because I saw a picture in the I believe it was in the Washington Post recently, Bernie Sanders back, and that's all you're going to see, in essence, should he become president of the United States of America, which are no longer united, other than by state lines and for the most part, territorially speaking. But if Bernie Sanders is elected, you're going to see his back, and you may not even see his back, because socialists and communists that aspire to kingship and kinship, if you will, even those people actually do quite well in life. And so, you know, you think that they're on your side, but they're really not. I mean, like, they're whining and dining with the best of, supposedly the best of the best, right? The Jay-Z's and the Beyoncé's and Beyoncé's, whatever. Anyway, and it's interesting because, you know, Sanders was being courted by with Reverend Al Sharpton and his constituency, because if you don't believe that Al Sharpton and the other Reverend Jesse Jackson and people like that haven't a constituency that perfectly mirrors the constituency of our inner onion, then you're sadly mistaken as well. And, you know, look, it'll be a cold day in hell before we can, I'm afraid, before this nation can dig itself out, you know, and take on the dirty job of saving this nation. I mean, we have to do it. It's become a necessity, but at the same time, how many people have the intestinal fortitude or spinal aptitude to take care of America the way it needs to be taken care of? We need to determine that which is worthy of our praise and our time, and I believe that would be individualism. I believe that the atheist in America that's not a militant atheist has the same right to freedom of the press that I have as a devout Christian I believe that a devout atheist that's not militant and the Christian that's not militant have a right to hope that he or she may attain to the presidency of the United States of America. And that's why I really liked, I'm not going to lie, I think Romney seemed like a gentleman and a scholar and a businessman. I don't think he would have morphed occultic horns and brought and foisted Mormonism upon us. I really don't. I think he just would have been, he would have made some decent business decisions for America. Anyway, the time is now 7:28 on the East Coast, and thankfully we had some rain today that froze, that melted, or the ice was able to thaw, and that's worked out well for our commutes for the most part. And aside from some of the heavier rains and some of the localized flooding, we're in pretty good shape right now for the rest of the week weather-wise. All right, I also received news today that quarterback Kirk Cousins, the Washington Redskins have suspended talks with Kirk Cousins in terms of being a franchise quarterback. Interestingly enough, I've learned as of late that a franchise quarterback oftentimes is tapped with a year contract to the tune of around $20 million for that particular year. And some of that, I believe, you know, comes in the form of a bonus. But Kirk Cousins had to face a 12th man in far too many Redskin fans early on. His offensive coordinator was schizophrenic through the first five or six games and wasn't able to mix up or properly mix up misdirection football because that's a game in and of itself, misdirection football. Kirk Cousins, I always knew he had it in him to be a great, to be a, even a superstar, in my opinion. And I hope that the Redskins sign him to a really nice lucrative deal for he and his wife. is an outstanding leader at New England. There were 8 drop balls. One of the balls was a little high and thrown a little hard. The other 7 were certainly catchable by any stretch of the imagination. Were absolutely catchable balls. So kudos to Kirk Cousins for putting together an amazing season, even facing a 12th man in the constituency of Redskin fans, you know, 40 or 50% of Redskin fans, 30 or 40% of Redskin fans weren't bright enough to see the forest for all of the trees. And now he's gelled with DeSean Jackson and his other receivers, Reed and all the receivers. Man, when they're healthy, they have like 7 or 8 receivers to go to. Okay, so Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins, their holes are in their defense, really. Their defensive backs, Will Blackman, young or not, the Washington Redskin cheerleaders, or any cheerleader, even in at the professional football level, which they're not as talented as the collegiate athletes and cheerleaders or what have you, but they at least know when to throw their arms up half the time or when to put them down at other times. And Will Blackman, when he was running out of real estate, would be chasing. He was always giving chase, always. He was always beat. And he was always beat by, and he was often beat by receivers that weren't the best receivers in the league. And so he'd be, even when he was hot on the heels of a would-be receiver in the corner of an end zone, Will Blackman actually wouldn't put his arms up when they were out of real estate. And I don't know if he was just delusional, kind of like Bernie Sanders fans, and, you know, believing that play extends into the tunnel when there are clearly out of bounds markers and lines and so forth that direct the field of play. And so, all right, so that's enough on the Redskins talk. They have to just plug those holes defensively if they hope to attain a ring, regardless of who they have at the quarterback position, which I'm a huge Kirk Cousins fan. He didn't berate or bemoan his receivers after the New England game. And those seven or eight drops, for those of you with an IQ, football IQ or pigskin IQ of greater than 50, actually what those equate to are extended drives. Oh, hello. And more points on the board oftentimes. So could we have beat the New England Patriots? You're darn tootin' we could have. In New England, absolutely we could have. Eight drop passes is unexcusable. Especially when seven of those were next to perfectly thrown balls. All right, that's the Redskins talk for you for this particular edition. I'm going to kind of stay out of that for now. I am Dakota Lone Star. The website is located at 40and28forever.com. That is 40and28forever.com. Next up, after the break, I will be back at 7:37 Eastern Standard Time, 4:37 on your West Coast. And I will be back to talk about another interesting article from the Washington Post a few weeks back, if not a month or so ago, and on ISIS brides. We're going to talk about that when I come back. All right, the time is 7:37 on the East Coast. You are listening to Dakota Lone Star, and that's still a little bit of a lingering sore throat going on with all of our weather as of late, which has actually been good for me in one sense, because the shoveling is a great exercise if you pace yourself. All right, now I'm going to turn to the Washington Post. Monday, October 5th edition, 2015. So we're going to jump back in time a little bit. Monday, October 5, 2015, and the Washington Post on the front page. The bottom half of the front page, rather. There is an article entitled, "Till Martyrdom
do us part. Life in the Islamic State. It says, women endure a world of forced marriages, young widowhood, imprisonment, abductions, and fear. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Because for women, you know, in the Middle East that are truly subjected to abductions, rather, that's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And but I did want to talk to another, I wanted to flip that coin over and speak to a couple of things from this particular article by Kevin Sullivan. And I'm going to go ahead and read the article to you, actually, or at least the beginning of the article. Kevin Sullivan, writing for the Washington Post, in Till Martyrdom Do Us Part. He said, somewhere in Syrian territory controlled by Islamic State militants, a jihadist from the Netherlands posted a cheerful photo on Twitter showing off an Oreo cheesecake that she had made. It was a fizzy propaganda moment that she shared with others who might be thinking about traveling to Syria to join the cause. It also had a very Islamic State twist. The cheesecake was photographed next to a grenade. Wow, how's that for propaganda? he goes on to say, about 200 miles to the south in an oven-hot refugee camp in Jordan, Rudania, 17, said her life under the Islamic State in northern Syria, which she fled in April, was miserable. Yeah, no kidding. She said she stayed inside her house near the city of Raqqa, the Islamic State capital, for more than a year, terrified that if she went outside, she would be abducted and forced to marry a foreign fighter. They cut the internet, but we didn't even want it anymore, she said. If we looked at the internet, we would see people living in the outside world. I guess the free world in one sense, not necessarily in Europe, where women are blamed for wearing clothes that induce rape. But she goes on to say, if we looked at the internet, we would see people living in the outside world, and that would make us sad. That made us sad. Seeing the outside world was just another sorrow. Well, that's true, because, you know, you've seen the bumper stickers that say God Jesus or God Milk. and as Dakota Lone Star in the Burnmobile, I've come up with a new one called God Subjugation. And if you exist under the iron fist of Sharia law and Millicent Sharia law and Sharia shankdom, Sharia shanks, yes, I'm talking about the quote-unquote men that often hide behind children and within their houses of worship, right, houses of worship, okay, that actually house many of their military operations and plans and even their the weapons that they use. All right. So it goes on to say, in Islamic State propaganda, life for women in the self-declared caliphate is filled with love, children, and the joys of domestic life, such as an Oreo dessert. But the reality is often far more harsh for women who have moved there from the Arab world, Europe, or the United States, according to specialists. It takes a specialist to determine that moving to Raqqa to become a bride, a jihadi bride, is not a good thing, right? So why don't we just fund some of that? Why doesn't the bloated Obama administration and pregnant Bernie palpitation monitor go ahead and fund specialists. You know, it takes a village to instill common sense in many, actually. It says those women usually drawn by romantic notions of supporting revolutionaries and living in a state that exalts their religion can quickly find themselves part of an institutionalized near assembly line system to provide fighters, and then it continues on 86, Alpha 6 of the Monday, October 5th, 2015 edition of the Washington Post. And we can imagine where that's headed. But here's what's interesting. Unless one was taken hostage or actually abducted, they must have known what they were getting into, what brand of Islam they were choosing. I blame the women that choose to travel from their world, Europe, or the United States and Canada and so forth, or any other quote-unquote portion of the free world. I blame the women that travel there. You know what you're getting into. That's just like the person that says, oh, I'm going to join the Nation of Islam in the United States because they're just championing the rights of African Americans, right? And the Union risks life and limb to free Southern black slaves, but they only did that because then they could bring in white people, a plethora of white immigrants to displace their black brothers and sisters that they risked life and limb for, so that they could control the northern hemisphere of North America. Yeah, that's schizophrenic. There's no other way to describe that. Why would any man or woman risk his or her life to free anyone anywhere in the world only to want to see that person displaced? You know, that would mean, if their thinking is true and if their argument is true, and give me a call at 929-477-4090 if you want to talk about this next point. Basically, if that were true, that would mean that I wouldn't have ever taken a stand for the Moroccan Muslim woman in New Jersey that was verifiably beaten and sexually abused by her Sharia shank of a husband. That would mean that I wasn't troubled after I saw Remembering Darfur, D-A-R, Delta Alpha Romeo, Union Romeo, all right, Darfur. I was remembering Darfur. I was so troubled after that I couldn't understand for the life of me why the United Nations didn't call in A-10 strafing runs to take out marauding, in this case, in this particular article, you know, the romanticized version of a true Muslim man. And so the Nation of Islam is just a complete joke, too, and schizophrenic at best. But go ahead and visit my website at 40and28forever.com. And, you know, look, we have a choice in America right now to make, and it's one that, it's a point of no return. There's no doubt about that. It's a point of no return. 2016 is, in fact, our point of no return. Should we go the way of Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, we will have entirely outdone ourselves, and not in a good way. or in a meaningful manner. Because at that point, you will be a serf. Everyone that doesn't work directly for Bernie Sanders will be a serf. And you'll be lucky if you see his back. And when you're groping and crying and moaning because you don't have any more fat to live off of within your body, you know, the carbs are all gone and your body's, the muscle is wasting away because there aren't enough groceries on the shelves like in Venezuela. Don't come crying to me or to any other conservative at that point, because we won't have it. We won't hear it. That's where we're at, folks. That's how vital this coming election is. And if you think that Christians are bad, just wait until you elect an uber-socialist, communist, Nazi. If you think we're bad, if you believe that all white people owe people of color an apology, if you believe that all white people are the offspring of those that made the maiden voyage and happened to live through the first winter in the Northeast and didn't die from the cold or disease, if you believe that the extent of migration, Caucasian migration, rested with the Nina, those that that rode the waves, and the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, you're not really the brightest. You're actually the weakest link, part of the weakest link in our nation's history. People came over. Far after the maiden voyage, there are Caucasians still making their way over here. Or, I'm sorry, people, European, of European descent. As a matter of fact, like I mentioned last, I think during the last program, or the program prior, there was a guy that had white skin. But he was from, I don't know if he was Greek or Russian or something, but he was residing in Missouri near St. Louis, and he was bludgeoned to death based on his skin color alone. I'm quite sure and adamant that the Honorable Martin Luther King Jr. did not intend for that. All right, have a nice evening, folks. 40and28forever.com. And DOC_OTA Lone Star on Twitter.